Emory University Podcasts.
I'm Kayla Berry, and you're listening to Healthier You, a podcast made by students at Emory University's Center for the Study of Human Health. Every week, we bring you personal stories and expert insights into our generation's biggest health questions. On today's episode, do our bodies really need sugar? I loved Swedish Fish as a child. I practically begged my mom to buy me those bright red fish gummies. But as I got older, sweet-talking my way to those treats became trickier. Yet, whenever I could, I would smuggle a pack into my room, relishing every hidden bite. But my relationship with sugar changed forever when I was diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome, otherwise known as PCOS. It causes a hormone imbalance and can also be a precursor for diabetes. When I found this out as a little freshman in high school, I declared a sugar exile and bid farewell to my beloved Swedish Fish. I was convinced that eating sweets would put me on a one-way track to diabetes, a condition that, from what I knew, sounded like a death sentence. But as the years went by, I started to wonder, was my tight grip on sugar warranted? Is sugar truly the villain it's made out to be? And if so, do I have to eliminate it completely? So let's start at the beginning, the science behind sugar. What happens in our bodies when we consume sugar? To shed light on this, I called Sharon Rhodes, a registered nutritionist. She told me something startling.
Carbohydrates, protein, and fat are the three nutrients. Everything that we eat, those are the nutrients that our body ends up metabolizing and using for energy and to help our systems function. Sugar is essentially glucose in the body, and glucose is one of those main nutrients that we need for energy. And sugar comes from several different sources. We have natural sources of sugar, such as fruit. We have whole grains, bread, cereals. We also have added sugar. So like what you might think of for sugary sweetened beverages, some of our candy and desserts. So sugar, there's several different sources, but essentially it's turned into glucose, and that provides our body with the energy that it needs to perform.
So our bodies need sugar for energy, but too much of it can create something called insulin resistance.
Insulin resistance is a condition, a disease that can happen over time. So if our bodies are working properly, then they will release the amount of insulin that's needed to help bring down that glucose level. But over time, if we are consuming too much, if we just have consistently high sugar diets, high caloric diets, it's a lot. It's a big load for our bodies to handle in order to properly digest that glucose spike. So sometimes our organs will get overreactive, either secreting too much insulin, or in some cases, it cannot secrete enough insulin. And the resistance is that insulin response that over time can get damaged. So what you might see in what we call prediabetes is that insulin resistance.
That insulin resistance that Rhodes mentions is also seen to be widely prevalent along lines of race. A 2022 study observing different gut biomes in black and white women found that African Americans in the study displayed lower insulin sensitivity overall. This meant that their insulin resistance was higher than their counterparts, and they were more at risk of developing diabetes. In fact, black Americans are nearly twice as likely to develop type 2 diabetes as white Americans, and this disparity has only gotten wider.
There's definitely a lot of misconceptions around sugar, and I feel like current diet culture and wellness culture is really, in the moment, demonizing sugar.
That was Alyssa Palladino, a certified nutritionist and personal trainer based here in Atlanta. She says that although consuming too much sugar can lead to serious health problems, it's also part of larger trends in diet culture.
Well, you're a baby because you're in college, so you didn't live through the 90s, but in the 90s, it was the opposite. People didn't demonize sugar or carbs, they demonized fat. So everything was low fat, but all the foods that were like high in carbs, high in sugar, and low in fat were considered healthy.
This made me curious to do some more digging into the history of sugar. From its humble origins to becoming a staple in our diets, sugar has a fascinating story. How did it evolve from a luxury item to a daily necessity? To answer this, I consulted Dr. Sarah Lewis Capilotti, a cultural producer whose studies surrounded the interactions between sugar and race.
So we're talking about the fact that the first enslaved Africans are brought to what would become marked and gendered as Hispaniola, which is today the Dominican Republic and Haiti. Sort of the first sugar plants were actually the second time that Columbus comes are transported from the Canary Islands to the Caribbean. And about 20 years later, again, you have the first enslaved Africans coming specifically to cultivate sugarcane in, quote unquote, the New World.
So sugarcane was being cultivated by enslaved Africans to create a new economy in the Caribbean. And as a second generation Jamaican myself, this hits home for me. But that's not all.
What I'm trying to do is sort of make an argument that when we think of sugar, that it is not just the gustatory. It's very easy for us to like sugar, sort of biologically attracted to sugar. But I'm trying to make some sort of argument around the fact that the gustatory also affects the aesthetic. We kind of think of raciality in terms of looking at or listening to, but I'm trying to make an argument that habitually by tasting, that is also influencing sort of our aesthetic orientations that reproduce a racial hierarchy of being.
By gustatory, Dr. Luz Capilotti means the way that sugar tastes. So what she is arguing is that our sense of taste also affects how we look at the systems like the production of sugar. We romanticize and consume it, sugar, like it is something natural and reoccurring, when in reality, it's a system of power reproduced.
I think also goes hand in hand with sort of refining tastes or naturalizing sort of what we think of as sweetness or what the sweet life entails, which only naturalizes a hierarchy of being based on racialization. Like it enables it to continually be sweet, even though it's literally founded on the most bitter practices.
So is sugar really the villain? According to these nutritionists, no. The problem isn't sugar itself, but the ways in which we interact with it. Moderation is key, and consuming too much sugar can lead to some negative health effects. As for me, it's not about declaring a war on sweetness or banishing it from my life entirely. But learning the ugly truth of the history of sugarcane production in the Caribbean didn't make me want to rush back into using it either. As long as I do it mindfully, I hope I can still have sweetness in my life. I just might trade the Swedish fish for an apple instead. Thanks for listening to Healthier You from the Center for the Study of Human Health at Emory University. If you like what you heard, subscribe to the show in your podcast app and make sure to leave us a rating or a review. This episode was reported and produced by me, Kayla Berry. Our theme music is by Tim Tosh. And special thanks to all my guests, nutritionist Sharon Rhodes, dietitian Alyssa Palladino, and Dr. Luz Capilotti for their insights into this episode. You can find links to all the studies and resources we mentioned in our show notes on exploringhealth.org.